This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. This episode is brought to you by Just Crack an Egg.
It's time to put the heat, the sizzle, back into your relationship with breakfast.
So head over to the egg aisle, which is not an island, it is a place in your supermarket.
I wondered.
And pick up Just Crack an Egg. It's a hot, fluffy scramble that's ready in less than 2 minutes.
Yep. You crack a fresh egg over your Just Crack an Egg, and you stir, microwave, and you're done. Boom. Your breakfast is ready.
Try all 7 varieties and take breakfast back.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any. And today we're actually not cooking at all.
But we are drinking it all.
And it's 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here with author and drinks writer Maggie Hoffman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we're going to be talking about batch cocktails, which, coincidentally, is the title of Maggie's new book. Maggie is a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle and the author of The One Bottle Cocktail and this new book, Batch Cocktails, which I've been enjoying very much.
I know. I was very excited to get, I think we got this book like a month or maybe even 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, something like that.
So I feel like I've really had some time with it, which has been a real pleasure because that also gave us time to really drink a bunch of cocktails.
So as you know, Maggie, on this show, we always start out with a segment called Memory Lane, where we talk about our childhood memories of drinking batched cocktails.
Now, so that's awkward.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we all like had a lot of like shaken like individual cocktails. As children. but batch cocktails, like the concept was barely even around back then. Seriously, though, when did you like first come across like the batch cocktail concept and become interested in it?
You know, I think there's sort of two paths to batch cocktails. I think some people, when you think about a batch cocktail, might think of like college punches, you know, garbage bins and Kool-Aid and terrible things.
Wait, garbage bins? Is a garbage bin the name of like a cocktail or a punch?
No, like a trash can, you know, dump it all in the trash can, the Everclear and those are terrible things.
Did you guys go to college parties like this?
I was not cool enough to.
I was not cool enough either. I feel like this is all just like lore for
so
me.
I went to some college parties, like a couple of college parties, but they like actually ID'd. So no, I guess I didn't go to those parties.
I went to one party that I remember that wasn't like in the student union.
Coolest possible place to hang out.
And it was, oh, now I can't remember what it was called. I hope this kind of thing doesn't happen anymore. We had to.
Oh, no.
You couldn't wear more than your underwear.
Oh, I've heard about this.
It was one of those.
How was it?
It was fine. I wore like a matching like hot pink bra and pair of underwear, but I don't remember seeing any. I don't think I drank anything before
going. We'll
post
photos at spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Shocking. I didn't drink anything beforehand. This is who I was at that time.
What was the word that producer Abby taught us that's like pre-partying, but it's like what the kids say nowadays?
Pre-gaming.
Pre-gaming.
Or pre-funking.
It was something even more awful than that.
Pre-funking.
Pre-funking, that was it.
Wow. Yeah. So these drinks are not those drinks.
Okay. Good.
There is also sort of the history of the punch. And there was a great book by cocktail historian David Wondrich about punch going way back. And those are these sort of lighter drinks that have this long history that they often have tea and something lighter. But I think what has happened in our recent memory, I moved to New York City in 2004, and there were all these cool cocktail bars, and they required so much work to get into, where you were like going through a phone booth or you knew the password, all of those things. And for a while, that's where the good cocktails were. And since then, what has happened is that, you know, cocktails are everywhere, and you expect every restaurant and bar to have good cocktails.
Sometimes without even needing a password.
Without a password. It's crazy. You just like point at the name of it and they give it to you.
I have a special app on my phone that has all the passwords for all the speakeasies, so I can just pull them up when I need them.
LastPass speakeasy edition. But, you know, now that cocktails need to be good wherever you go, I think professionals have used batching as a tool to be able to give you a complicated and delicious drink quickly. Because in a speakeasy, you might have been willing to sit around for 15 minutes before you got your drink. But that's really not what people want in bars today.
Why did we ever start making drinks in like one serving portions? Do you think it's like an issue of potency, like to limit consumption? Because we would never make pasta in a single serving, or like you never make one cupcake.
I mean, I make pasta in a single serving for lunch.
Really? You don't make more than that? Like to have leftovers?
Not usually.
We have been kind of calling this family style cocktails.
Oh, sure.
Which, I don't know about that. But I do think
for when all the kids are at the table.
Right. Yeah. And the parents need to have family style cocktails.
Speaking as a parent, I am sick of having all of my kids each request a different cocktail at dinner and have to shake them one after another. And I mean shake the kids, not the cocktails. Which you should never do. You should not shake a child, but you should give them the cocktail that they ask for. I probably interrupted an actual answer to that question.
You know, I'm not actually sure, but I think people do forget. And, you know, it probably goes back to the early days of ice.
that's not what I expected you to say at all.
People do forget that in every cocktail you've ever had in a bar, one of the ingredients is water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when you're getting drinks one by one, they don't list water on the menu. They're not pouring water into a jigger. But when you get drinks one by one, they're stirring that water in the form of ice, or they're shaking in the form of ice. So in these cocktails, you're not just multiplying, you know, your favorite drink and putting it in a mason jar or a pitcher. If you show up that way, your drink is going to be very strong and very sweet.
Oh, interesting. Mm. I was wondering about that because the drink that we're drinking right now, which is the Happiness, which we'll talk more about in a little bit, the recipe asked me to add some water and bitters before serving. And the bitters made sense, but I wasn't sure why I was adding water. But it does, but it tastes right.
I think people assume that water is just to bring down the proof, and they think, oh, I'm really tough. I like my drink strong. But you really need that bit of dilution to every serving to bring it all into balance.
Sometimes when I make a Negroni at home, I feel like I'm so glad to hear you explain it this way, because the first few times I did it, you know, I like stirred the ingredients over ice, and then I don't have like a Hawthorne strainer, so I like strained it through like a tea strainer into my glass, because I'm a great bartender, as you can tell. Anyway, and I was like, this is really intensely sweet and strong. And so I put a couple ice cubes in it and let it sit for a minute. And just that amount of water added it made it taste like I wanted the Negroni to taste. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. And I think people forget that drink making is like cooking, that you do want to taste. So these recipes all have water added. But you may find that, especially if it's something being served without ice, it's being served up, that your taste is to lighten it up with a little more water.
Mm-hmm.
Drinks that are served on ice, you want the first sip to be good, but you also want the last sip to be good.
Yeah, so what do you do about that? Do you just drink fast?
You should just drink fast.
I thought so. That's what I've been doing.
But like, there are some drinks, like I like an old fashioned a lot, and I kind of like how it evolves over the course of drinking it, if you're sipping it just as the ice cube melts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is the beauty of using the type of like large ice cube or spherical ice cube.
Which I did not do today.
Because those are going to melt more slowly, right? Yeah.
And if you have a lot of ice, that's another thing I am going to briefly make fun of you because there's one little ice cube in this glass.
Please do.
And I do really believe that, you know, ice keeps ice cold. So if you fill your glass and really load it up with ice, all that ice is going to keep the whole thing colder. This little measly, pathetic ice cube.
Wow, Matthew, do you hear these words?
Is going to melt pretty quickly. There we go. So this ice is going to keep the other ice cold, and it probably won't melt as fast.
No, I kind of like mine. Don't touch it, Matthew. So I think I first heard of the idea of making cocktails in batches for the purposes of aging, like for aging them in like a little barrel mm-hmm. or something like that to infuse them with other aromas and flavors.
Like an actual little barrel, like that a monkey would be? What does a monkey do with a barrel?
Some patron of Delancey at some point gave us like a small bourbon barrel.
And Jeffrey Morgenthaler was doing them in Portland at Clyde Common.
Okay.
Yeah. And so
and before that, you aged your drinks in a backpack that someone had just left behind at the restaurant?
Exactly. Yeah. We lined it with a plastic bag mm-hmm. first. A used plastic bag. We are big into like mm-hmm. recycling plastic bags.
Yep.
Anyway, no, I was going to say that, or I was going to ask, so batching, I mean, I think what I like best about this idea is that, you know, when you're making single drink after single drink, I guess it's fine if you're a bartender and that's your job.
It is okay to be a bartender.
But if I'm having people over for dinner, for instance, I feel like it's one thing to stand there and like chop some vegetables while you're talking, but I don't want to stand there and be measuring multiple ingredients. Mm-hmm. Is this what made you want to think about batch cocktails? This idea of how to be able to enjoy people while also drinking a good cocktail?
That's totally it. And I think, I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about how much time we spend on our phones and how little time we spend with each other. And I think if you're going to have someone over, you want to really spend time with them. And so I'm an ambitious cook, maybe over-ambitious, will get myself kind of in trouble in the kitchen mm-hmm. with too many ingredients, too many things, and adding a cocktail to the mix is too much. But if I can prep food and kind of have it doing its thing and have a cocktail that's ready to go before the doorbell rings, then I can sit down and have a conversation and do the thing, which was the reason why I invited these people over mm-hmm. in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the realization like that I had much further into the book than I should have is like, I'm thinking like, we don't have people over that often. Like, how often am I going to make a whole batch of cocktails? And then I realized, wait a minute, like these things keep, we can have some tonight and we can have some more tomorrow without having to do any work tomorrow.
I assume that there are some that keep better than others. Can you give us kind of some do's and don'ts, like general guidelines about batching cocktails?
Yeah. So this book is organized by flavor profile, but there's also a page in the front that has a list of drinks that keep. But basically, if you're using fresh ingredients, watermelon, citrus, lime, lemon, orange, those kinds of things, you really want to do same day. Mm-hmm. When you go to a good bar, they are juicing, if not for each drink, they're juicing that day. If you want to get really precise about it, some people feel that orange juice really doesn't taste good after more than an hour.
Uh-huh.
Lime juice supposedly tastes its best after 4 hours. I just like to sort of prep anything fresh a couple of hours before my guests come over, and I'll put it in the batch at that point. But anything that is shelf stable or refrigerated, like a syrup, those things can be mixed together in advance. And in fact, I really like to chill the spirits in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of starting out cool.
No problem here.
No problem starting out cool. So basically, things that are sort of stirred style cocktails are going to keep. And I did some really nerdy testing that only turned into like one
okay.
or two lines.
Tell
in
us everything.
I bought a dorm fridge.
Okay.
Which looks really sophisticated in my living room. And I made each of these drinks, the stirred style drinks, which mm-hmm. are made with just spirits and liqueurs and syrups and that kind of thing. I made them a few different ways. So I split the batch into 4 versions. I made like 18 drinks, 4 different ways. And then I made them to test 2 weeks out, 1 month out, 2 months out, 6 months out, and more.
Wow.
I love this.
And each one I made undiluted without the water, with the water, with the bitters and without the bitters and all the different. So I was kind of testing those various permutations. So with water, with bitters, with water, no bitters, all the different things.
Okay.
And I put them all in mason jars. and I put them in the fridge, and we started tasting them in blind tastings. And I sort of didn't know what would be the best way to do it, and I wanted to be able to tell people how to do it. And in the end, after the blind tasting, it became clear that if you want to make these drinks completely as written in the recipes, they will be good for a week or two just fine. Especially if you're going to split it over a couple of nights. I kind of like to put it in a mason jar. So I'm like, okay, this is the servings for Monday and this is the servings for Friday, just so that they are not sitting with a ton of air.
Sure.
In
there. Well, and also you put it in a mason jar because you're from Brooklyn.
Sure. And if you are going to get nerdy and keep them longer than 2 weeks, I think most people are just making drinks for the week or, you know, it's meal planning, basically. But if you are thinking about the long term, maybe you want to do holiday gifts or that kind of thing, then if I'm keeping it more than 2 weeks, I like to leave the water and the bitters out. Mm-hmm. And I think leaving the water out keeps the drink at a high enough proof that it's preserved. Mm. And they just felt like they kind of fell apart flavor-wise if they were aged with the water. But aged without the water and without the bitters, we have jars that we are opening that are a year old, and they are so delicious.
Wow.
This episode is brought to you by Just Crack an Egg.
You know, if there's one thing I love, it's a hot breakfast. And if there's
that's the only thing you love?
Right. There is one thing that I love in the world, and that thing is a hot breakfast. But I also don't want to put in basically any work to get it. Can you help me?
I can, Matthew. Here's what you do.
Okay.
All right. You put on your shoes.
Notes.
You walk down to the grocery store. You go to the aisle where eggs are sold. All right. And
I have to put on my shoes?
Anyway.
Slip-ons? Would that be okay?
They have this product called Just Crack an Egg. Basically, what you do, you bring this home, you crack a fresh egg into your Just Crack an Egg.
Yeah, stir it's like it. A cup full of fresh ingredients.
Yes, full of like breakfast fixins, like everything you need for a Denver omelet, for instance. Anyway, microwave it and you have got a fluffy, fresh scramble ready to eat.
Yes, I recently had the Southwest style Just Crack an Egg and it was delicious. And I'm going to say it took less than 2 minutes.
Don't wait for the weekend to add a little hot, hearty breakfast love to your morning.
Woo. It's time to run with your arms wide open to the egg aisle and take breakfast back with Just Crack an Egg. Don't squeeze the eggs too hard, though. Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Grove. And Grove is a company that makes it super fast and easy to get your hands on the cleaning products, the natural cleaning products that you want for your home and family. And it's spring. I guarantee there is something in your house that needs to be cleaned, whether it's a trail of muddy footprints or some dust or the shower or yourself. I'm about to put in my Grove reorder. And I love that Grove has all of my favorite brands. They got Mrs. Meyers. They've got Seventh Generation. They've got Burt's Bees. And they've got Grove's own flagship label products like Grove's glass cleaner. It comes in these tiny little concentrated tubes. And I'm going to reconstitute it in my Grove brand glass spray bottle. I love using it. It almost makes cleaning the stovetop fun. And now when you place your first order of $20 or more, new customers will get a free cleaning set, which includes Mrs. Meyer's Spring Hand Soap, Dish Soap, and Multi-Surface Spray available in peony, lilac, or mint, and a Grove Collaborative Cleaning Caddy and Walnut Scrubber Sponges. I have gotten those Grove Scrubber Sponges. They are great. So try now before this exclusive spring offer runs out. For a limited time, get a three-piece cleaning set from Mrs. Meyer's, free 60-day VIP membership, and a surprise bonus gift when you sign up and place an order of $20 or more at grove.co/spilledmilk. That's grove.co, not grove.com, grove.co/spilledmilk.
So the drink we're drinking right now...
Tell us about it, Molly.
Well, Matthew, you made it.
I did. So basically what happened was I got this email like 6 weeks ago from Maggie saying, I want to be on your podcast. I'm sending you my book. Make a cocktail now and leave it in your fridge until I get there. And I did.
And so this one is called Happiness. It's basically a reverse Manhattan, meaning that it's got more vermouth, two parts vermouth to one part bourbon in this case. And then, Matthew, just today you added Angostura bitters and water, right?
Yeah, it felt like I was putting in a crazy amount of bitters.
But you had kind of a crazy amount of cocktail.
Of course.
You had like almost a 1 liter bottle of cocktails.
Yeah.
And so, Maggie, you mentioned when you first came in that this was one of the cocktails that you still have aging after a year. What I know that, you know, that Matthew used probably a different bourbon from what you used, but what do you notice about it? What changes after a year?
I mean, it's all a little mystical, but I think there's a textural change similar to when you have wine that ages. It sort of seems to get sort of velvety.
Legs.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't legs like when you like see it like dribbling down the side of the glass?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know what that measures, but there is a textural change and it seems to sort of coalesce mm-hmm. and I think it's just really delicious. There is a little bit of that beginning of oxidative flavor like you would have in sherry or something like that, but it's all kind of tied together and I don't know. They're just, it's cool. It's like going back in time or something.
Yeah. So I made two adjustments to this recipe. One is I didn't have any bourbon and only a small amount of rye on hand, and
you know, recipe writers hate it when you do this.
I'm like the guy in the review on Epicurious. So I used Jameson because that's what I had a bottle of.
I think it really works. Good. I mean, this is one of those drinks that basically is a play on a classic.
Right.
And there's not too many variables. So I think you could have fun with this one.
Matthew, what other recipes did you consider making from the book?
Okay. So another one we talked about was the Bone Machine.
The Bone Machine has been the quickest one to sell out at all the book parties we've been doing.
Really?
I think people
What's
name.
In the Bone Machine? Well,
Pixies song or the Tom Waits album?
You'd have to ask Jeff Lyon, who made the drink, who's at Third Rail in San Francisco. And I had the drink at the bar and was like, I need this.
Yeah, so the Bone Machine is sherry, bourbon, Amaro, Benedictine, and orange bitters and Angostura bitters. There were some of those things I didn't have. I do not have a very well-stocked bar.
Well, and the beauty of this, in that it's a batch, is at least you're not just using like a quarter of an ounce and then putting it on the shelf for the rest of the year. If you're going to buy a bottle of Benedictine, it's good to like start moving through it. And I like that one because it drinks like a whiskey drink, but it's actually mostly sherry.
Okay.
And you use sherry quite a bit in these cocktails in this book.
Sherry.
And I loved that. I feel like whenever I have a cocktail out and about that has sherry in it, I love it. And I have never thought to stock it in my own bar. And now I feel like I have a lot of reasons to.
Yeah. So the other change that I made to the recipe today, which is not really a change, is I bought a half bottle of the Carpano Antica, which was perfect for making a three-quarter recipe.
And now you're going to go buy a full bottle
because it's really
good. So
good. Yeah.
So good. It's so good.
So another one that that I'm looking forward to making is The Perfect Circle, which I'm just going to assume is named for the R.E.M. song, which is sherry, Campari, and sparkling wine.
Super light, refreshing, spritzy. And sherry, you know, sherry in cocktails often is like almost a little savory. Mm-hmm. It's not sweet. So it's, you know, unless you're using a sweet sherry like a PX, it's usually cutting the sweetness of the drink, which I like.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the Frankie Panky, which is in the bitter section. Well, so this book is divided up into sections, right? There's herbal ways one, there's fruity, there's bitter, there's boozy, there's a little something for everybody.
Including an alcohol-free section.
Oh, that's true. The Frankie Panky is a hanky panky that trades the gin in for tequila instead.
Ah,
I like the idea of that.
What's a hanky panky?
A hanky panky is basically it's like a martini with Fernet. It's gin, Fernet Branca. What else is it, Maggie?
I think you've got it. I think it's
something like that. Probably has a little bit of dry vermouth because it's kind of martini-esque.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, instead of gin, this one's got tequila. I think that sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm. I also, and I must admit, I was really drawn to the sort of bitter and boozy drinks.
Because you're the Negroni girl.
I am. So there's also the Double Down, which sounds really good. It's almost equal parts rye and cardamaro, which is an Amaro that has like a, well, I mean, it
cardamom?
To me, it reminds me of the flavor of cardamom, but turned into like a bitter aperitif. I don't think it has cardamom in it.
I think it's... Oh, don't quote me on this, but I think it's named For cardoons.
Okay.
Not cardamom.
But it's got this like really like a warm spice feeling to it.
Yeah, kind of Christmassy spice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so rye, cardamaro, and then a lesser amount of Fino sherry.
Cardamaro sounds like if I was trying to make up the name, like I was making a fake cocktail recipe and I wanted to put in some fake ingredients. That's not like the word I would come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in some cardamaro and some Fino Lorolo.
Fino Lorolo Barolo.
And then a couple of Rolos.
Yeah.
Just that's how you're going to make your millions. You got to make some Fino and Barolo.
You got some Fino Barolo. It's one bottle of Fino Sherry, one bottle of Barolo.
And then you pour it over Rolos.
You pour it over Rolos.
But first you freeze the Rolos, so they're ice cubes.
You actually, you liquid nitrogen freeze them and then grate them.
This is getting better by the second.
Uh-huh. We're mixologists.
You know, Maggie, I feel like we've pretty much written the proposal for your next cookbook here, so you're welcome.
Oh, it's all cocktails made with frozen
candy bars.
Okay. You laugh, but that could be a thing.
Can we talk a little bit about bitters and why we would add bitters toward the end? So I think of bitters as sort of the bartender's salt and pepper, right?
Mm-hmm.
This sort of like a way of a kind of doing a fine balancing of flavors,
mm-hmm.
or sort of just making it taste good.
Yes.
Why would we? So most of these recipes, if they use bitters, you suggest that we add bitters like right before serving. Why do we do that?
You can certainly add bitters anytime up to about 2 weeks, but different bitters are different. And I've talked to a lot of bartenders about this. I think if you're aging longer than 2 weeks, which is probably not what you're doing most of the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's better to add it at the last minute. It seemed in my aging trials that the bitters sort of faded if they were sort of a spiced Angostura or something like that. They were sort of fading over time and disappearing. There's also, they can, anytime you're aging a drink, obviously you're going to mix it gently before you serve it. But, you know, I think some people have experiences where they only taste the bitters and it's because there's been sort of a separation.
Okay.
I've also heard that people have experiences with spicy bitters seeming accentuated over time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you are making drinks for that week, and this isn't that many drinks, it's about 8 servings usually, it's fine to add them in just following the recipe. But if you're aging for a year, you want that control.
Yeah. Okay. So Matthew.
Yes.
I kind of want to know, I want Maggie to tell us.
Okay.
So
basically I don't have to do anything here.
So it's late May. It's late May, right?
Yeah.
When people are listening to this mm-hmm. episode. What should people think about drinking right now? Like which, if they were going to make a couple batch cocktails in the next month, what recipes should they start from? End of May, early June? What are we going to make?
Yeah. I mean, I start thinking about barbecues and maybe that's a little ambitious weather-wise.
Sure.
But, you know, I really think these drinks are great for like casual outdoor gathering.
Yes.
You are not running back and forth to your kitchen. You don't bring a cocktail shaker outside. This is a situation when you want a pitcher ready to go for everyone. I have one that I really like that's almost a play on sangria, a white sangria, but
uh-huh.
It's called The Birds Again. It's from a bartender named Sean Traxler, and it's a mix of Sauvignon Blanc and dry vermouth. So it has kind of that extra sort of herbal flavor, and you use fresh basil and lime juice, and you're almost making a sour, like a margarita is
really
a sour
good.
With tequila.
Yeah.
This is a sour using Sauvignon Blanc. And I really love that with the fresh basil. It's just really, really refreshing. Oh, there's so many. I mean, I think you almost work your way through starting with herbal and then fruity. I'm really into watermelon drinks,
mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of watermelon drinks. One of them is super simple, just watermelon juice and rum and Peychaud's bitters, which is has mm-hmm. a sort of anise flavor
mm-hmm.
that's really nice with watermelon. It's just one of those like perfect pairings with lime. And you don't need a juicer for this. You can just put watermelon into a blender and then push it through your strainer.
I don't think you said the name of the drink.
That's the Sandy Bottoms.
Okay.
It occurs to me. So so some of these drinks are batched for a 1 liter bottle. And some of them you specifically suggest a 2 quart pitcher as the vessel. Where do you get your 2 quart pitcher? What's your 2 quart pitcher? Because I don't own a 2 quart pitcher. I mean, honestly, guys, while we've been talking about this, I've been picturing myself emptying out a plastic gallon
sure.
milk jug. Yeah, guys, so, and taking like a milk jug partially filled with cocktails like to the beach.
I love that. I love that. And I think I sort of wanted to start with the smallest size people have because you can put 8 servings of punch in a larger container, but you can't put 8 servings of punch in a smaller container.
True.
And you have to be very sure. One of the like best practices is to make sure you know how big your container is. And if it's smaller, if you're going to split between a couple, like, so something I do sometimes is take like empty seltzer bottles and nice. Make a big batch and split it between. So those are about 1 liter. And so if you're making 8 serving batch, you could split it between 2 of those, but you want to mix everything together first so that you're not like, oh, I have one more cup of lime, I guess it doesn't fit.
Okay.
So you want to mix in the larger container, mix in your gallon and divide it in whatever you're going to bring. Maybe a water bottle. I was just in New York on book tour and brought cocktails to meetings in water bottles.
Amazing.
And they stayed cold, which was pretty rad.
Nice. Uh-huh.
Did you take them in like insulated water bottles?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I love
cool.
it. I love it.
Like a sneaky high school student. This is a thing I've been hearing about recently. Let me ask you a question that is completely unrelated to cocktails, but it is related to volume measurements. Say you've like had dinner and you've got some leftovers that you want to put away and you go to find like a Tupperware container or something. Do you, like me, always grab one that's way too big?
Yes.
Okay.
But
Molly?
I have recently edited all my Tupperware down. Okay. We are a 2 Tupperware household.
Like 2 sizes or
small,
literally 2 no, vessels?
Small or big.
Okay.
And
I like
nothing
that.
Else. So you're never looking for lids.
Right.
It's changed my life. Highly recommend.
Wow. This is your next book.
Wow.
I'm going to do this. I'm dropping the microphone and I'm going to go do this right now.
I've never thought about this.
It's going to be my first mic drop.
Feel like I guess I must be maybe I don't know, maybe this is like my one special talent in life is judging the volume of things just by eye.
We all have our superpower.
We all have our talents.
Rifling through the drawer looking for the round lid or the medium round lid or the slightly bigger round lid.
No, because I have very few Tupperwares or containers that are not those like deli containers that they use in restaurants a lot or Cambros that they use in restaurants. I only have a few that are not those. So it's pretty easy to find them.
Nice Cambro, bro.
Thank you. Thanks, bro.
All right. Maggie, I know it's going to be way too late for listeners to come to your event this afternoon as we're recording. What do you have anything coming up that may not have already happened yet by the time people hear this on May 23rd, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really excited for summer because I'm hoping people will have like a bunch of barbecues and picnics. And I just want people to make a bunch of batch drinks and take pictures of them and put them on Instagram and tag me. Like, I just want to see people having a good time this summer.
And invite you, presumably.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we should all just make a lot of cocktails, tag Maggie in all of our photos.
Okay.
I think that's what she's saying. She just wants us to tag
it's
her
gonna
left
be hashtag
and right.
Having fun without Maggie.
Yeah.
Hashtag
exactly.
You're not invited.
hashtag batch cocktails, Maggie not included.
You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com, where we will post a link to buy Maggie's book, Batch Cocktails. We will post, may we post the recipe for the happiness?
Sure.
Okay.
Wow, Matthew, way to really put her on the spot.
Yeah,
ask her that
right.
With the tape rolling.
Yeah. What if the answer was no?
Okay. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. What is your favorite batch cocktail?
Yeah. And what kind of pitcher do you use?
Yeah. Let's talk pitchers. I want to see pictures of your pitchers.
I want to see pictures of your pitchers. Wow, this
pictures.
Cocktail is really having its effect on me.
I've had like a quarter of mine and I'm already feeling it. We're real lightweights over
Ooh.
Here.
Let's see. You can find us anywhere you've already found us. So, CastBox, Stitcher, Google Play. I don't know, Matthew, where else?
Yeah. All right. Thank you to Maggie Hoffman for being our guest today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Come back anytime, but bring cocktails. And thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. You can age us over a year, but we're not going to get better.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we eat something delicious. Nope.
No, that's not it at all, Matthew. Try again.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Motley.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all.
And Matthew can't seem to get our slogan out. What? Is it our slogan? Is it a slogan?
It is.
A catchphrase.
It's a mantra.
A mantra to live by.
I'm still doing like 100% better than you did on the last episode.
That's true.
Okay. And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something.
Wow. Maggie, I think you're making Matthew nervous.
This is great. And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all.
Wow. Would you like me to do this?
Well, to be fair, I did have one sip of this cocktail.
Ugh, Matthew is a disaster.
No cooking required.
Okay.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.